I think that, you know, the situation in Ferguson, like so many situations these days, gets cast into black versus white and white versus black. There's certainly those who will try to bring a partisan interpretation to it. But let me say that the parameters of this situation are compelling for those of us who still believe in justice. A young man is dead. His parents are grieving. The community of young people are grieving along with his parents. Our justice system is broken, and we all know that. Regardless of our racial background, regardless of our class or our status, we know that this system is broken. And unless we are prepared to confront that, unless we are prepared to seek each other's support, unless we are prepared to speak to the underlying systemic issues, situations such as what we are experiencing here in Ferguson will not go away. There's a reckoning coming. We must change things in America. And I would hope that people of faith would feel today that change needs to begin today, and it needs to begin with them.
Thank you so much, Reverend Alvin Herring. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome. God bless you all and your listeners.
That was Reverend Alvin Herring, Deputy Director of Faith and Formation and Director of Training at PICO, a national network of faith-based community organizations working to create innovative solutions to problems facing urban, suburban, and rural communities, speaking with KBOO's Kathleen Stevenson. Up next is Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, open daily December 17th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week is Rio Ren, a textile artist from Portland. Her show, To the Core, is on now at the Jupiter Hotel Gallery at 800 East Burnside through January 20th. Welcome to KBOO, Rio.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
This show consists of large squares of silk with mostly concentric circles, patterns, abstract patterns on them. And just tell us what the name of the technique is. It's mainly a Japanese technique you use.
Yeah, shibori is a Japanese technique, and it's basically resisting fabric in different ways by stitching, clamping, to get the dye to go where you want it so that when you open it, you have a pattern. So I use that a lot in my work, and that's kind of how I created the circles and most of the patterns that you see at the show.
So it's like tie-dye.
Yeah, I believe that shibori actually means tie-dye, but it's very ancient, and they traditionally used it for kimonos, to get the patterns on kimonos. And so it's, I haven't done a lot of research on American tie-dye, but I'm pretty certain that that's where they got it from.
Mm-hmm. So as you come into the gallery, which is the lobby of the Jupiter Hotel,
right?
There are some couches, so all your stuff's around the outside, and some of it's hung in the window, and it's this very fine silk,
yeah,
and the light's shining through. The first big one as you come in is called Jasper,
yeah,
and it does look like a piece of rock that's been split open and polished. Like where did the name come from?
Well, that's exactly where the name came from, because when I was thinking about core, I was thinking about what that represents, and in a scientific way and in a metaphorical way. So the lot of the pieces that I created, I was thinking about stones, and I was thinking about tree rings, and like cutting microscopic views of like cutting plants in half and the stems and stuff, and they all have this like circular pattern. And so that's was my intention. And then that particular piece just really called out to me, jasper. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of some kind of agate or something like that. And so...
So you would make this, and then the name suggests itself afterwards.
Right, yeah. I don't really name them before. I always name my pieces after.
So this piece of silk, you put it through a ring, or what do you use to make the colors? There are all sorts of delicate pinks and yellows and browns in this piece.
Yeah, I think I started out with that one where I started in the center so that I could just isolate the center and have the outside be white, and just to get the circle itself as contrast. And I composted onion skins, and then after I did that, I was like, no, that's not enough. So then I did it again, and I added like indigo, and then I kept doing it until I got the color feeling and texture that I wanted. And then that particular piece and a lot of the other pieces kind of came upon a technique to get a lot of the dark lines and bleed marks. And so after I was done, I went and did the outside of it with that. So it was kind of like a lot of layering to get it to where I wanted it.
So you'll put the plant wrapped up in the fabric?
Yeah.
And how long do you leave it?
Onion doesn't take a long time to get a good color or print, whatever you're going for. So maybe like 3 days. But you could do it for up to a week or 2 weeks, I've done, for different plants.
What's the liquid you're using?
Just water. Just, you know, and you control it. So you just use a little bit of water, and then sometimes, most of the time, the water is an okay amount, but sometimes if it's too dry, then it doesn't penetrate enough, and then you don't get real deep inside, you know. But usually the water will seep through because it's thin silk and you're leaving it for so long and it's kind of bound, mm-hmm. and, you know, it doesn't have anywhere to go.
And this silk, what type of silk is it?
It's a silk habitat, and it's also called China silk. It's just a real, there's different weights. The one that I prefer to use is the 8.
You're doing this as fine art. This is, you know, you're taking squares and you're making shapes, and you want to hang it on a wall in a gallery. Someone might buy these and they would hang them on their wall, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have any use. They're too delicate to be used or worn or anything.
Well, yeah, these pieces are just, you know, wall hangings, panels mm-hmm. and stuff. But
you come out of making clothes, right?
Yeah, I had for 5 years, I did, and I still have Raw Textiles is my label of fashion, but I started out making lingerie, and the idea of that was I was dyeing the textiles with the natural dyes using the rusting process and the composting and natural dyeing, and then I was fabricating all the garments, and then, you know, like a real collection for fashion, I was doing, you know, photo shoots and presenting lookbooks and that kind of thing. So that's all on my website. Yeah, I consider the art definitely separate from the lingerie, but I feel like the art bleeds into the lingerie and the fashion more so than the other way around, because that's kind of like the basis of it, and then it gets kind of dumbed down, if you will, or more consumable, commodity-like.
Mm-hmm. Some of these pieces are very kind of delicate, and the imagery is so, I'd say, vague, you know. It's soft, like watercolors.
Yeah.
But it's within mm-hmm. silk. And then you get to this big piece called Dreamscape.
Oh,
and it looks a lot more, you know, solid, and there are dark lines in it. Tell us what that looks like.
Okay. Well, that piece is pretty much like pink, and I basically dyed it pink first, and then I went in and manipulated it so that I would get patterns by composting with hollyhock around the outside. And so I basically did the opposite of all the rest of them, where I created a circle on the inside. With that one, I created the circle from the outside, so the inside was blank. And then I put tea bags all over it for probably about 2 months. I just kept laying the tea bags and letting it dry and bleed out, and it created this kind of rich, like, bleedy lines that are everywhere, and they just kind of do meander and do whatever they want.
They look like the surface of water. They're just very irregular, and there are peaks and troughs.
Yeah, and yeah, it kind of has a texture to it. And then after I did that, I went in and basically just stared at it for a really long time, and I had to figure out which side was up, and so I kept turning it, and then I started seeing things, images, like a lot of eyes. I see a lot of eyes left in the puddles of stains or whatever. I took some thickened iron and painted on the lines, like mimicked the lines so that I would accent the image that I was seeing with my eyes so that the viewer could see it as well. Because, you know, without that, you might pass it up or you might see it, but I wanted you to see it. Mm-hmm. So I like outlined it. That piece is called Dreamscape. And my idea was that, like, and this also goes with the theme of core. So it's like, if you could slice your brain in half and see what your dreams look like, but just the pieces of fragments of things that are going on. So it's kind of like the little crevices and things. And so what's hidden in there?
And were you literally drinking tea and then you had this on the floor and you throw
yeah,
a tea
on
bag
the floor.
On it?
I did do that because I collect tea, and everybody that knows me knows that I am the crazy tea lady. But I did have a lot of tea left over from used tea bags. So I used a lot of the used tea bags that I had as well, and I just threw them down. But then I would, you know, because it was such a large piece.
Mm-hmm.
But I
so
did.
So you could just keep it on the floor.
Yeah, so I did. I kept it on the floor. I mean, I had plastic down so it wouldn't go everywhere. But yeah, I just kept it on the floor and just kept, you know, after it would dry and create the line or the bleed line, then I would take it off and then I would put more tea on it and then it would create another line inside of that. And it just kept kind of going in and in and in and in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was getting excited about that.
And then you painted in these dark lines. Is it iron powder or a supplement?
Yeah, it's a ferrous sulfate powder. And then I just added the warm water. And the thing with iron, and this is like an old ancient method of dyeing, using iron and tannin, and they create black. And so I was using that. So just painting it on the tea was giving me black lines.
Mm-hmm.
But the iron itself, when you look at it, it's just clear.
So you were taking this abstract image and then drawing out
right
what you saw.
Something concrete, yeah.
Right.
Like anything that I saw.
And that technique, yeah, you do again, but you draw the image out by using brass thread.
Yeah.
So you sew an image with this shiny kind of gold-looking thread.
Yeah. The brass thread is basically like, it's called metallic organza, and it's this basically, I bought yardage of this fabric, and it's actually real metallic threads. You know, it's the way fabric is made, there's a warp and a weft, and then it just, you know, it's real tight, and that's what makes it solid. So I'm taking off the weft, but I'm taking off one thread at a time, and it's the brass one. And it's basically brass that's wrapped around a little core of something that's not brass. And then I thread that in the needle, and then I chain stitch. So, and it's really delicate, it breaks, and so it's kind of a laborious, tedious process, but I do it. Because, I don't know, I want to.
And that's in one of the pieces called Primal?
Primal.
Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, it's in Primal, and I did it in The Breath of Fire. In Primal, I was just copying what I saw. Like, I don't even really, that one was really abstract. Like, I didn't really physically see anything specific, like eyes or a face or a mouth. I was just kind of outlining some of the stain marks, the halos of the stain marks. And mm-hmm. to me, it had this kind of symmetricalness to it. And so that's what I did with that one, just more abstract. But with The Breath of Fire, I actually had an image that I used the iron and I painted it on, and then I took one of the, like, it looked like a lion's head to me, and so I took the inside of the lion's head and I did a circular chain stitch to fill it in.
Mm-hmm. So this process, you do it in your studio, and presumably you listen to music.
Yes.
While you're doing it.
Yeah.
What kind of music do you listen to?
I like a lot of music. music is like really a big thing to me. I like world music, so I like a lot of like Indian. I like, for whatever reason, I mean, I like American singers, but I really like it when I don't know what they're saying for some reason, because I can just really get into it more. You know, you're not constrained by language.
So who's an artist you put in a track?
Like Chubby Sabah, I like his music a lot. American artists, I love Patti Smith. She's good. But she's more of a poet, you know, that's kind of like, you know, you hear the words, you know what she's saying, but PJ Harvey.
So let's listen to a bit of Chubby Sabah.
Yeah.
DJ Chubby Sabah, and he played here recently, right? Well, when he was alive.
Well, it was a couple years ago. Yeah, he died, I believe he died just like last winter, and he was actually on the Beloved thing for that that they do in New Year's, and he died before it. So, but yeah, it's really sad, but he was a very good DJ, musician, collaborator.
This kind of work, I mean, it sounds like some of them take months to make.
Yeah, they do.
How do you do it? Do you do something else? You can five other things at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Are they kind of an afterthought, or do you have this passion to work on these pieces at certain times?
I get really excited, so I'll start like maybe three pieces simultaneously, and I kind of know in my head what I'm trying to do. And like if I compost it and it has to be there for like a week, then I'll be working on something else. But then I'm like thinking about that piece the whole week, and then I write everything down, so I keep track of it, so then I know when that week's up. And sometimes I'll, you know, only do 4 days instead of five because I'm so excited, and then I open it up, and then I have to sit with it and decide, am I done with this? What else do I need to do? In the past, though, my work has been a lot of rust printing, and it's been really more simplistic, where I just print on from the rust object, mm-hmm. and I get the actual print of whatever industrial object it is that I'm using, and I'll layer that and then do shibori inside of it and stuff like that.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Rio Ren. Her show To the Core is on now at the Jupiter Hotel Gallery. So you take pieces of metal and like wrap them up in silk, basically, to get the rust?
For this show, I did. This show is actually not, it's like really different than, I would say, fairly different than most of the work that I have been doing, because I do mostly rust printing, where I actually don't as much fold the fabric up before I get the print, but I lay it flat, and then I get a really good crisp print of whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But with this show, I was using the rust more as a mordant, which is a
what, sorry?
An assist, a mordant, which is an assist in dyeing. iron is considered a mordant. It changes the color, makes the color more color fast as well.
Mm-hmm. And you have, I mean, the rust itself changes the colors of other things, right?
The rust will change the
color.
So
you get this purple-gray because of a chemical reaction.
Yeah.
Which is not orange, mm-hmm. but it's reacting with something else.
Right, yeah, because that piece you were speaking of had the madder root in the center, and then on the outsides there was like a rust ring, and then between where the madder root was orange and the rust ring was rusted looking, in between there was kind of like a purpley grayness,
mm-hmm.
because it was just kind of bleeding into the madder root color and changing it.
And how accidental are things like that? I mean, do you have 10 that you throw away for every one?
No, I hardly ever throw anything away. And if I make a mistake, I usually save it and then do something like, I mean, because if I make a mistake, usually it's just one little small part. I mean, yeah, I haven't had a whole large piece that I was like, this is terrible, and throw it away. Yeah, I'll cut it up into little pieces and use it for like panels, for instance, for like mm-hmm. the Big 500 show or whatever, things like that, like patching things up or mm-hmm. whatever.
And you do have some pieces with holes in them, and how did that come about?
Well, like for instance, the one Primal, that one has some holes in it because I did a patina method where I get the color, I get the copper color print from vaporizing, and if you leave it in the vapor bath for too long, it will start to just eat through the fabric because it's chemical and metal oxidizing, and it just, you know. So at that particular piece, I liked it like that. But yeah, that could be very well, like, definitely that would not be made into lingerie.
And then there are two that kind of go together. Mother Seed.
Oh, right.
These two big ones. Mother Seed is a square, and then next to it is a rectangle, which is bigger,
uh-huh.
called Universal Transmission.
Right.
So you took the image from...
Yeah, from Mother Seed. Yeah, the Mother Seed is like really simple. It doesn't even really have a circle. It's mm-hmm. just got a center. And that
it's you folded the cloth twice.
Yeah, so I folded it into fours. Yeah, and then I put like some leaves in it. Maple leaves or something, and then I had put rust in it, and then I basically just set something heavy on top of it and left it for I don't know how long, I don't even know, maybe 3 or 4 days, and then that's really all I did to that one. And then when I opened it and I, you know, figured out which side was up and stuff, I started seeing the images again, and then I laid tracing paper over it, and I drew like maybe 3 or 4 versions of what I saw, different kind of things, caveats of it. And then for that other piece, Universal Transmission, I took one of those images and kind of centered it so it lined up with some of the dye. Just happened to be a coincidence that like her eyebrows or whatever. And then I stitched that with the chain stitch and thread.
So the other one, the second one, has a picture of a woman. But she's like a kind of Babylonian goddess.
She's like a goddess
lady. With kind of horns. And call them antennae.
I call them antennae. Well, because her arms are outstretched, and then she has this like metal, this line like an antenna or something mm-hmm. going from her horns to her hands. And so it's like she's tuning into the universe because the universe called her. And she said, hello. Mm-hmm.
And she's picked out in brass thread.
And she's all stitched
in
brass thread.
She's gold looking.
Yeah, it's really subtle.
And you identify with this character.
Yeah.
How?
How? Well, I think the biggest reason is because when I was doing it, I decided she looked like she was saying, you know, like the cosmos was behind her and she was floating in it. And the universe was talking to her, and I identified with that specifically because I'm going through a huge transition in my life, and there's a lot of weird cosmic stuff that I've been experiencing, and so I feel like maybe the universe has been sending me messages.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are other ones on the wall, but we can jump to the installation. As you come into the room, there is an installation which is... a wide piece of silk with stripes?
It's actually tea bag paper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's paper.
From?
For tea bags. From Tazo, when I got a donation from them. And when they make tea, They also do like regular little tea bags for, you know, your cups, but they also do larger tea bags for like Starbucks because they used to have a huge account or whatever with them. And so they would do those big 5 gallon iced tea bags. Nonetheless, they have these reams of tea bag paper. And when they run low, they just throw them away.
So you have this paper, it's sort of up against the wall and then it comes down the wall and away from the wall. And then it gets narrow as it's sort of scrunched up.
Right. It's interesting that you're describing it completely backwards.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then it goes up again. It's kind of like
way.
A scorpion's tail. It's
yeah.
all, it's curved up and
right.
crunched together. And there are three or four steel bands around
yeah.
it.
Right.
So it's a big sculpture. I mean, it does
yeah.
look like an insect's kind of discarded skin or something
oh,
like that.
Okay.
It's brown
nice.
And stripy.
Yeah.
And what is it called and what does it mean?
That piece is called Transformation, and it actually has like a poem that goes with it. But yeah, that piece, I basically took the teabag paper and I composted it and then dyed it. And I scrunched it up, and that actually the scrunching is a shibori method of that specific. That's a you could do that with fabric and dye it and get a really cool pattern if you, when you open it. But yeah, I was thinking about trying to capture an emotion with that piece. And again, like I said, I've been going through a lot of transition. And so for me, it's kind of like about constricting everything and tightening everything and then going through this portal and then releasing and finally getting to a point where you can open up more and release. And then that's when the paper becomes flat and then rolls up the wall. And so it's kind of about surrender and release.
Mm-hmm. Does doing something personal that you don't explain in the gallery, what do you think the viewer will get out of it if they don't understand you, where you're coming from?
Well, I honestly don't know, but I did write the poem to go with it. The poem is actually, doesn't even really talk about that at all. It's more, I mean, maybe if you read the poem and you hear this interview, you might go, oh, but the poem itself is kind of like, to me, the poem is kind of sexual, but it also really is me writing a poem about the composting method, because I talk about how the heat and the compression and the sweet scent of the plant tissue rotting, leaving a mark and making a pattern and that kind of thing. So I'm kind of like tying in the actual process with and relating it to my life. But it's still pretty literal to the process itself.
And those steel bands are actually the bands that are in what?
Yeah, the steel bands I recycled from a crinoline bustle-like garment that I made early on, probably like in 2007 or 8 or something. And it was covered in like a silk organza, which is like a real sheer silk. And it had been rusted so much that it was ripping, you know, falling apart. And I had already photographed it a whole bunch. And so I decided to just take the bands out of that and reuse them because they were already rusty. And so it's an upcycled installation.
So you pick stuff up off the floor.
I do. You saw that too. I collect bottle caps. Yeah.
Why?
Well, I like bottle caps when they're smashed, you know, after they've been, you know, treated badly and then they're just laying there. I like them. But I did have a show in 2010 at Disjecta, and it was a gallery show. And during that show, he also allowed me to do a fashion show.
Who's that?
Brian Sereth and at Disjecta. And so I did a recycled fashion show. And so all the pieces in it were recycled from something. And so one of the pieces I made was a belly dance costume with bottle caps, and they were all pretty much all found from off the street. And then I did like a huge crinoline skirt with a bustle that was like 1,400 used tea bags, and that was part of the Tazo tea donation, and then on and on and on.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week was Rio Ren, a textile artist. Her show To the Core is on now at the Jupiter Hotel Gallery through January 20th. There is a reception on December the 5th. if you'd like to go along and meet the artist. Thanks for coming in, Rio.
Thanks for having me, Joseph.
Thanksgiving is a time to give thanks. But for many, the problematic history of the creation of this holiday casts a shadow on what Thanksgiving is supposed to represent. On Thanksgiving morning, on KBOO, we bring you Indigenous Voices on a Colonial Holiday. Tune in from 8 a.m. to noon for a series of special public affairs programs, including a conversation with local activist and founding member of Eradicating Offensive Native Masketry, Jacqueline Keeler. We will also hear the voices of Dr. David Lewis and Dr. Michael Yellowbird. We'll talk about history, politics, education, food, and how to decolonize Thanksgiving.
A professional living, how can money justify the greed?
You're listening to KBOO, Portland Community Radio.
And now for the KBOO News at Noon for Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. A grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, decided last night not to charge Officer Darren Wilson for the killing of Michael Brown in August. The announcement led to widespread protests in Missouri and across the country. 164 protests are taking place in over 37 states in Canada, Japan, and the United Kingdom. This morning, a 20-year-old in Ferguson died near the spot where Michael Brown was shot, but the circumstances of his death are still unclear. 13 people have been injured in the Ferguson area protests, and police have fired over 100 shots of live ammunition. Davey D., from our sister station, KPFA